Disclaimer. The following episode of 90s Crime Dime talks about domestic violence, suicide, and allegations of sexual assault. Listener's discretion is advised. Hello. It's December 7th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Dime. Hello and welcome to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. As always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and you are having a great weekend as well. And as I prefaced before the episode began, today's case will discuss some touchy subjects that may trigger feelings and may not be suitable for younger listeners. Therefore, again, listener's discretion is highly advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1993, and in the suburban Florida city of North Lauderdale, the city's motto was, "A fun city in the heart of Broward." Reports state that although North Lauderdale didn't have a large downtown or cultural district, the city fostered small-scale community events that reflected its growing diversity. For example, North Lauderdale's Hampton Pines Park was a common venue for picnics, youth sports, and occasional cultural festivals. Also, many of the residents, mostly the younger ones, influenced by both their parents' roots and South Florida's emerging youth culture, embraced a mix of styles, from hip-hop and Miami bass to dancehall. Despite many in Lauderdale, though, having a community-oriented approach, reports state that North Lauderdale faced rising crime concerns in the early 1990s. Drug activity in parts of North Lauderdale and the surrounding counties was a headline issue countrywide. The early 90s witnessed drug trafficking and street-level drug activity, largely tied to cocaine, marijuana, and crack cocaine distribution, including in North Lauderdale. Overall, though, the city's residents were said to feel relatively safe. However, in the winter of 1993, a shocking crime occurred in the city, which was not only heinous, but it was broadcast live to locals, and it would leave many in the city and surrounding areas wondering why such a horrific crime would occur. In the following case, you'll find out about the crime and victims, the investigation, and the aftermath in a case I title, Carnage on Camera. While the story takes place in 1993 in North Lauderdale, Florida, let's go back several years to 1959 in Havana, Cuba. Reports state that in that year, a baby named Maritza Munoz was born on October 29th. According to reports, Maritza was born into a loving family, but also into a country reeling from the recent overthrow of their leader, Batista. Reports state that Havana was once known for its glamorous nightclub era, featuring Hollywood actors mob-owned casinos, big spending, and nightclub names flashing in neon lights. But after Batista fled Cuba and Fidel Castro took over the country, while many took to the streets to celebrate, many were terrified. As 1959 progressed, many families, like Maritza's, faced uncertainty about their lives in the country, until they realized, over time, that with Cuba's increasing social changes, people fleeing, and revolutionary committees unofficially monitoring certain neighborhoods, they no longer felt safe and wanted to move to another country, like many other Cubans. However, by the 1970s, Maritza's family still lived in Cuba, and while they hoped to escape someday, by the mid-1970s, when Maritza became a teenager, she met another young teen by the name of Emilio Nunez. According to reports, like Maritza, Emilio grew up in a close-knit family in Havana. Even though he too grew up in changing Cuba, his parents noticed that young Emilio seemed a little different from other children. According to reports, young Emilio displayed some psychological and emotional problems. So much so, that by the time he reached early elementary school, his parents sent him to see a psychiatrist. And by the time Emilio reached fourth grade, his parents discovered he had learning problems as well, as he had to repeat the grade at least 3 times. He eventually finished school and went to high school, and reports state that when Emilio turned 16, he met Maritza and immediately fell in love. They became a couple shortly after meeting, and Emilio fell so in love with her that, according to reports, he told his father, Emilio Sr., that he wanted to marry her soon. Emilio Sr. thought the couple was too young to get married, but against his advice, Emilio Jr. and Maritza married in 1977, and soon after, they welcomed a daughter, Yoandra, in May of the same year. Maritza and Emilio Jr. doted on their daughter, and the family seemed to be very happy. However, by 1978, according to reports, Maritza allegedly pulled away from Emilio, maybe because she felt she was too young to be married, or perhaps she saw other options. But the young couple seemed to argue a lot, and by this year, Maritza left the marriage, leaving Emilio devastated. Even worse for Emilio, by this year, he and some of his family decided they too wanted to leave Cuba. But unfortunately for Emilio, he confided in a trusted friend about his plans. His friend reported him to the police, and Emilio was jailed as a political prisoner, and later sentenced to 20 years. Reports state that after he was sent to prison, Emilio's mental health continued to dwindle, as he was missing his family, still upset about Maritza leaving, and he missed his precious daughter, Yoandra. Another blow for Emilio was that, according to reports, while in prison in 1980, his father, Emilio Sr., told his son that he was leaving for Miami on the Mariel boatlift. According to reports, the boatlift was described as, quote-unquote, a mass immigration of Cubans to the United States that took place from April to October 1980, after a group of Cubans sought asylum at the Peruvian embassy in Havana. Fidel Castro unexpectedly announced that anyone wishing to leave Cuba could do so from the port of Mariel. This triggered a large-scale movement in which about 125,000 Cubans crossed the Florida Straits, mostly arriving in South Florida. The group included families, workers, political descendants, and also some individuals released from prisons and psychiatric institutions. And as Emilio Sr. got ready to leave the country, he assured his son that he too would be able to leave. But it didn't work out that way, as Emilio Jr. had to remain in prison while his father left, and Emilio Jr. felt his father had betrayed him. And yet another blow for Emilio came when he and Maritza officially divorced, and he learned that Maritza had also traveled on the boat lift. Reports state that she left the now 3-year-old Yolandra with her mother in Cuba while she went to find work in Miami, and that when she made enough money, she would send for them to come to Miami as well. When word got back to Emilio that Maritza was no longer in the country, it was reported that he went through even more depression and psychological problems, and even went through electroshock therapy to try to help him. If only it helped him very little. Fast forwarding 8 long years to 1989, Maritza was finally able to send for her mother and her daughter, Yolandra, to join her in Miami. Also in that year, Maritza married a man named Armando Martin. Also in the same year, a ray of hope came for Emilio as well, when reports state that he was among about 100 prisoners whose sentences were reduced and who were granted asylum in the United States. He now had a second chance, and his first goal upon arriving in Miami was to locate his family, especially Yolandra, and bond with her again. Curiously, however, before he left for America, he remarried and became a doting stepfather to his new wife's son. When Emilio arrived in Miami, reports state that although he was happy to be released from prison, he settled into less than desirable circumstances with his wife and stepson in a one-bedroom apartment and got a job on a farm where he worked and was later promoted to farm manager. When he earned enough money, he moved his family into a mobile home on the farm and saved a bedroom for Yolandra in hopes she would drop by more often. However, reports state that since he was away from her and Maritza for years, she didn't quite know him and didn't form a bond with Emilio as quickly as he'd hoped. Maritza also apparently pushed for a bond with Yolandra and Emilio, but Yolandra, who was now a preteen, wanted to bond with him at her own pace, and also focused on other things like other preteens, like her social life and school. Reports state that when she entered middle school, Yolandra had many friends and was even voted most popular. Yolandra was also a straight-A student and participated in her school's Crime Watch program, which aimed to keep the school safe. Many at school knew her as the life of the party because she was lively and told great jokes. However, according to reports, after Yolandra graduated from middle school and started high school, her family and classmates noticed a change in her. She began to rebel, her grades dropped, she skipped classes, and she became somewhat withdrawn. Yolandra told some friends that a big part of her change was due to problems at home, especially since she started dating a boy named Angel, whom Maritza and her stepfather apparently disapproved of. But even worse for Yolandra was that by the time she was 15 in 1992, she found out she was pregnant, but kept it a secret from her parents. Also around this time, reports state that CPS had investigated Maritza for allegedly hitting Yolandra in the face with a belt, although it's not clear if she'd hit her more than once. Due to all the trauma in her young life, Yolandra was at her wit's end and felt overwhelmed. According to reports, on November 25th, 1992, Yawandra unexpectedly offered to clean her parents' car, and they agreed. However, they didn't realize that Yawandra had a more sinister motive. Tragically, the next morning, November 26th, Maritza and Armando checked on her in her bedroom, only to find Yawandra's lifeless, bloodied body face up in her bed. She'd taken her own life with a shot to the chest using Maritza's 25 caliber pistol, which she kept for protection in the trunk of the car. This explains why Yawandra asked to clean the car the night before, to secretly access the gun without raising suspicion. And her suicide devastated her family. Yawandra's suicide was said to have obviously gutted Maritza completely. However, reports state she pulled herself together as best she could while planning her daughter's funeral. And she also had to deal with Emilio. You see, according to reports, after Emilio arrived in Florida, although Maritza encouraged a relationship between him and Yawandra, she wasn't expecting him to get closer to her, allegedly. Emilio was said to have stalked Maritza and didn't like her being remarried, despite being remarried himself. Also, when Emilio was around Maritza's family, it's alleged that he had a temper issue, and he hated that Armando had a hand in raising Yawandra. His emotions got so bad that Maritza grew scared of him and worried Emilio would get even worse when he kept telling her and her family that he'd do a better job raising Yawandra. And by the time Yawandra's funeral came, Emilio, shockingly, didn't even know she'd passed until he got a call from a family member telling him about her death. Her funeral was that day, and that he'd better hurry to the funeral if he wanted to see his only child one last time. After Emilio got that phone call, it seemed as if his world had shattered. Why and how is Yawandra dead? Why didn't he know about it? Why didn't he know about her funeral? Why did one of his family members have to tell him everything? And by now, he was seeing red. We'll continue with what happened next after a short break. According to reports, while Maritza and her family were trying to lay Yawandra to rest, they had already prepared for Emilio in case he were to find out about the funeral, as they hired officers for protection there. And when Emilio arrived, he didn't grieve as much. At first, he was seeking answers. He reportedly asked Yawandra's friends at the service if they knew how and why she died, and how Yawandra was feeling in the days before her death. Emilio also reportedly asked her friends if Yawandra loved or hated him, or if she thought he had abandoned her. And in response, some told Emilio that Yawandra indeed felt he wasn't stepping up to the plate as a father to her. Maybe not abandoned, but to her, he wasn't doing enough. Later, after Emilio learned his daughter had committed suicide and was pregnant, it agonized him even further. He at first didn't believe Yawandra killed herself and thought someone killed her, possibly Maritza or Armando. Due to this, he continued to threaten the couple and even thought Armando abused Yawandra and was the one to get her pregnant. However, shortly after Yolandra's death, investigators came across her suicide note, which was confirmed to be in her handwriting, and she named Angel as the father of her baby. She also said she didn't feel she was the daughter her mother wanted her to be. Once Emilio received confirmation that Yolandra had taken her own life, and the father of the baby wasn't Armando, he was still angry and continued to blame Maritza, believing that a heated argument with her led Yolandra to commit suicide. He also blamed her for giving Yolandra easy access to her gun. By this point, as he pieced things together, even if they weren't true, Emilio's anger grew even more. He kept stalking Maritza and Armando, and even made threats against Maritza in public places. It became so dangerous that Maritza tried to get a protective order against Emilio, but the authorities refused, saying it would only make him angrier. Eventually, Maritza and Armando moved out of their home and stayed with relatives in another part of Florida, where Emilio couldn't find them. Still, Maritza lived every day in fear for her life. Meanwhile, speaking of authorities, Emilio pestered detectives investigating Yolandra's case for weeks, seeking answers about his daughter's death. Eventually, the detectives dismissed his concerns, confirming that Yolandra was pregnant and had taken her own life. Case closed. However, this still wasn't enough for Emilio. He still felt he wasn't getting the answers he needed and believed no one was listening to him. By January 1993, he decided to make his voice heard. According to reports, Emilio called his local Telemundo station and accused Yolandra's mother, Maritza Martin, of being involved in her daughter's death. His story caught the attention of Telemundo's talk show host, Ingrid Cruz, who invited Emilio to share his story on her show. On January 18, 1993, Ingrid Cruz and the news crew met with Emilio at his home, and Ingrid interviewed him and let him tell his story. Emilio talked about Maritza's child abuse charges, blamed Maritza and Armando, but mostly Maritza, for Yolandra's death, and how he told police numerous times that they needed to look at her regarding Yolandra's death. Emilio also added that he was incensed that the detectives in her case told him it was pretty much an open and shut case. After the interview, the news crew followed Emilio, his wife, and stepson to Yolandra's gravesite at Queen of Heaven Cemetery in North Lauderdale, Florida, so he could place flowers on her grave. Coincidentally, as the crew was filming, a reddish sports car rolled up, and Emilio exclaimed that the driver was Maritza. Once Ingrid learned this, she dashed to Maritza's driver's window, and while the window was still rolled up, she asked her if she had anything to say about Yolandra's death. Maritza remained silent, staring stoically straight ahead while wearing sunglasses. Then Emilio approached her car and yelled, "Talk now, talk now." Ingrid told Emilio to stay back to avoid a conflict, and then he got back into his car. Maritza then got out of her car as Ingrid continued to try to ask her questions, and she too walked to Yolandra's grave. As they got closer to the grave, though, Emilio crept back up towards them, pushed a crew member out of the way, and horrifically pulled out a gun and shot Maritza in the back of her head. As Ingrid and the crew ran away with her screaming, a camera crew kept rolling as Emilio shot Maritza 11 more times, killing her. Emilio then walked away towards his car, and as he walked, Ingrid, still shaken, asked him what he did, and he responded, quote-unquote, "what I should have done a long time ago." He then sped off, leaving his wife, stepson, and camera crew at the cemetery. After the murder, cameraman George Delgado got into his vehicle and called 911. He told dispatch that Maritza had been shot and that her ex-husband, Emilio Nunez, was the shooter. He explained that he was trying to find Emilio, but also wanted to stay away from him because Emilio not only shot and killed his ex-wife, but he was also very large, strong, and dangerous. As police searched for Emilio, he couldn't be located quickly, so they issued an all-points bulletin. While he was being hunted, the story of Maritza's murder spread like wildfire. Many news headlines were written, such as, "News crew films man fatally shooting ex-wife near grave of daughter," and "Man guns down ex-wife at their daughter's grave." Many news stations also replayed Maritza's murder on the nightly news, with many complaining that it should not have been shown. Many viewers also watched Emilio's interview and saw him as a loving, devastated father who just wanted justice for Yoandra. However, on January 21st, 1993, 2 days after Maritza was buried next to Yoandra, a newspaper interviewed Maritza's widower, Armando, who said that, despite how Emilio was portrayed, he was anything but an upstanding citizen. He talked about how he barely saw Yoandra, so much so that Yoandra didn't even want to go by his last name. He spoke about how Emilio stalked them and said that despite what Emilio said, Maritza was a good mother and even pushed for Yoandra to have a relationship with her father until Emilio started stalking them. He also disputed the claims about Maritza punishing Yoandra after she got pregnant because, according to Armando, they didn't even know she was pregnant until after she died. Curiously, however, Emilio Sr. also gave an interview where he said Maritza, too, was a good mother, and he mentioned that his son was known to have psychological issues. This changed many of the public's opinions about Emilio Jr. as that of a cold-blooded killer. That same night, police received an anonymous tip from someone claiming their family member was traveling with Emilio as a companion on a Greyhound bus headed for Los Angeles, and that the family member was unaware of the murder. When police contacted Greyhound, they confirmed that Emilio had purchased a 9:45 p.m. ticket from Miami to Los Angeles on Greyhound, bus number 403. Authorities eventually tracked down the bus and on January 22, 1993, found it at a stop in Fort Stockton, Texas. FBI and Border Patrol joined local police in the search for Emilio on the bus, and when they surrounded it, they confirmed he was on board. However, when Emilio saw them and realized they were there for him, he refused to go quietly. As the authorities got on the bus to arrest him, he reached for his gun to scare them away, but police quickly subdued him as other passengers ran off the bus. We'll continue with the finality of this story after a final break. After Emilio was taken into custody, the district attorney and public defenders worked together to bring Emilio to trial. However, reports state that it would be a complicated process because Emilio kept being difficult in court and fired many attorneys, even spitting on one. He was also tested several times to determine whether he was fit for trial. And when he was finally fit to stand trial in January 2000, his trial began. His attorney wanted him to plead insanity, but Emilio refused. In their opening statements, the prosecution opened by playing the video of Emilio killing Maritza and painting him as a cold-blooded killer with no remorse. The defense opened by saying that what Emilio went through was a quote-unquote Greek tragedy. They said all he wanted to do was to see his daughter after being held prisoner in another country, and Maritza kept him from seeing her. They also added that Maritza was not a good mother, especially since he wasn't even told Yolanda died, and he was cruelly told of her death on the day of her funeral. Therefore, his attorneys asked the jury to find Emilio guilty of manslaughter. Also during the trial, Ingrid Cruz was a witness, and when Emilio got the chance, he approached her and accused her of treating him like a dummy. As a matter of fact, on the second day of the trial, Ingrid was called to testify. The defense implied she may have called Maritza to the graveyard that day to add sensation to the story. They also suggested Emilio murdered Maritza because he was under pressure from the show. However, Ingrid denied calling Maritza and said she had no idea she would show up. It was just a coincidence. However, after both sides rested and the jury deliberated for only 40 minutes, on January 25th, 2000, Emilio Nunez was found guilty of first-degree murder and soon after was sentenced to life with a minimum of 25 years. It has been 25 years since Emilio was convicted, and it's still unclear whether or not he has had a parole hearing. However, as of December 2025, Emilio Nunez is still listed as an inmate in the Florida Department of Corrections. The story of the tragic murder of Maritza Martin comes from the sources of the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, I know that one was a very tough one to listen to. That's why I did preface again about the a listener's discretion is advised, because there were going to be some touchy subjects regarding this episode about Maritza Martin's murder. I'm just going to say a few opinions, I promise, a few. Number one, I'm pretty sure a lot of you have probably heard of this case because this was a case that was big and caught on camera while the cameras were rolling for an interview. And I know some people have seen this on YouTube. It may be kind of, you know, hard for you to watch, but I do want to give you some reference about this case. I'll put the link to what I've seen about this case and Maritza's murder, unfortunately, on YouTube, from YouTube, on the show notes as well. I had heard this case years before, and I had seen another documentary about it not too long ago, and I was like, well, let me bring this case to the show myself, and I'll do a little bit more research. And I found a lot of things about this case during my research. And at first, when I'd heard about this story, a lot of it had to do with and talked about Emilio killing Maritza at Yolanda's grave, and talked about how he pretty much accused Armando of sexual assault, and that how he blamed Maritza for everything, and that Armando could have gotten Yolanda pregnant. But after doing my research, I don't believe that's the case. I think Emilio was just angry an angry man overall. I believe he's, in my opinion, he still had some feelings for Maritza. He was angry. He spent time in prison in Cuba. He was away from Maritza and Yoandra. I believe he wanted them to be his original family still. Maritza had left him before he went to prison, and he was still hurt by that. So all that accumulation, and he also was upset that Armando had a hand in raising Yoandra because he was still in Cuba, and he didn't like that she'd remarried, even though he'd remarried, so a double standard. I think he just had to blame someone, and I don't think, for me at least, all signs too, that he did not do his part as much as he said he did or tried to be a father to Yoandra. And I felt guilty about that, but instead of dealing with his own problems and his own shortcomings, he blamed everything on someone else. And with all the accumulation, like I said, of him possibly, in my opinion, still wanting to sort of be with Maritza, he snapped. And when she drove up to the cemetery, which I do believe was a coincidence, I don't believe Ingrid Cruz called her, he found the opportunity to take out what he felt was the cause of his daughter's death, which Yoandra killed herself. But he still blamed Maritza for driving her to suicide. And I don't know if that's really fair. And I didn't find that much about the child abuse charges. But maybe, you know, a lot of teenagers mouth off. And maybe she did slap her with the belt for punishment. But I don't know. I didn't see anything that suggested she kept doing it. Or that she just abused Yoandra on the daily. I think it was a discipline thing. And it just went left into Emilio's mind, and it all came to this. And unfortunately, Maritza lost her life to her ex-husband, and her daughter lost her life by her own hand. And that's just really sad and unfortunate. And like I said, Emilio's been in prison for at least 25 years by this point, but I don't know if he's had a parole hearing. I couldn't find anything about that, but he's still listed on the Florida Department of Corrections website, and he's apparently in maximum security. So he's still a danger, at least to officials. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope you found it interesting. Again, if you haven't already, please leave a hopefully nice rating and or review on the podcast platform where you listen to the show. I'd really appreciate it. Also, you can check out Instagram, 90s Crime Time on Instagram, where the followers have, astoundedly, gotten larger. It's a lot of followers on 90s Crime Time's Instagram page. I don't know where they came from, but I appreciate you all for following. You can follow more 90s stories there until the next episode comes out. Stay safe and healthy, and I will see you soon with the season 6 finale of 90s Crime Time.